May it please the court, counsel, co-counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois.
Can you speak a little louder?
Sure. We represent the appellant in this matter, Ralph Hernandez. At sentencing, the district court clearly committed double counting by holding Mr. Hernandez.
Well, I don't really understand. Actually, I didn't understand either brief on the subject, but he's both a felon in possession and the seller of a gun with an obliterated serial number. So as I understand it, the base offense was selling the gun without the gun that has the obliterated serial number, and then he's given a bonus for being a felon in possession. Now, is there anything wrong with that?
Actually, Your Honor, it's the other way around. His base offense level was based on the fact that he was a felon in possession of a firearm.
And he has the 20 for that, right?
Correct.
And so what I understood, although I too found this a little murky, is that after the grouping rules and so on, the judge is indeed required. That gives the offense level anyway. You know, he's got his criminal history, he's got a defense level, and it goes up by 2 because he isn't just a felon in possession. He is also somebody who has a firearm with an obliterated serial number, so up it goes, and he winds up somehow with a 26 because I guess now there's also reason to believe it's going to be used in connection with a felony. And that gives you the 120 to 150 month range. It's hard for me to see how the district judge then achieving a sentence that falls within that range by giving him the consecutive terms, the 120 and then the 30 more, could possibly be committing error.
Well, our argument in this case, Your Honor, is that imposition of consecutive sentences for the same conduct as he received an enhancement for a specific offense characteristic is the double counting.
But he hasn't changed the range. The range is produced by the computation that I just described, and you get 120 to 150. The district judge can choose any number of months in that range without double counting. He happens to achieve, as he's entitled to do under the sentencing guidelines, a sentence within that range by making it partially consecutive. Actually, it's probably not even completely consecutive, but it's partially consecutive. But I don't see why that, you know, if he'd gone above 150 because of the obliterated, then I could see maybe there's some issue, but he doesn't. He stays right on the button within the range.
Well, Your Honor, without the 2 additional levels for the obliterated serial number, his base offense level would have been lower. Therefore, his guideline range would have been 120.
He's convicted on account of obliterated. He's not just convicted for being a felon in possession. He's convicted on a separate count.
Correct.
And you're sort of saying we should just disregard the conviction altogether on that count.
No, the consecutive sentence adequately holds him accountable for the conviction on the obliterated serial number. Similar, as I argued in the brief, to the Section 924 relationship with the sentencing guidelines. In essence, when a defendant is convicted under Section 924, the conduct that is the basis of that conviction is ignored for the purposes of sentencing.
That's a different situation in that it's within one conviction, and if you're convicted for using, quote-unquote, this all came up after Bailey, but if you're convicted for using the firearm in conjunction with, you know, the crime of violence or the drug offense, then that sentence on the 924C takes care of the use of the firearm. So suppose you have a different conviction too, maybe an 841 conviction. If you have the 924C, that'll be consecutive, but if the 924C gets thrown out because it wasn't really used, as Bailey means the term, then it was okay to go back to the sentencing guidelines and add an enhancement for using, which was a much looser definition of using. That's why everybody did that in those cases. But you couldn't have the 924C plus the 2D, whatever it was, you know, 1.2 or something. This is a different case, I think, altogether. This is simply two different convictions, and the felon in possession doesn't need. I mean, in other words, each offense is giving its own contribution to the sentencing range, I think.
I think, Your Honor, it's analogous to this 924C situation, which also has two convictions. And the one of the convictions is responsible for consecutive sentences, and the other one is accounted for through the base offense level. But you cannot account for the same conduct as the 920, the C conviction.
But the problem is that no one is double counting. And in the other, this is, again, you're just asking us to disregard altogether the fact that he's been convicted of using the obliterated, you know, having the obliterated serial number gun. And so it's like the two conviction situation. Remember, in Bailey, the problem was with the definition of use. There's nothing wrong at all with consecutive sentences if you actually qualify as having used a firearm.
Correct.
And that I see is this case you have, the legitimate conviction under both statutes and thus legitimate use of consecutive sentences.
Well, Mr. Hernandez was held accountable for the same conduct twice, which is essentially double counting. He received a harsher punishment because the same conduct was accounted for twice.
No, because he had two different crimes.
Correct.
He was convicted of two separate crimes.
And he received consecutive sentences.
And he can be given consecutive sentences for two separate crimes.
Yes. I'm not contesting the...
Are you saying in every case where there are consecutive sentences... What would his sentencing range have been if he'd just been convicted as a felon in possession?
If the four-level enhancement for the knowledge that it was going to be used in another felony, it would have been 100 to 125 months, which is 25 months lower than...
And if he'd just been convicted of the obliteration offense?
Because he was a felon in possession, the guideline range...
No, forget that. Suppose this is completely separate. So suppose he had just been... Suppose he wasn't a felon in possession, just the seller of an obliterated gun.
If he was the seller of an obliterated gun without being a felon,
right.
He would have been, the base offense level would have been 12 under A7 of that guideline.
What would the range have been with these?
I'm not exactly sure what the range is for a 12.
Didn't he have an offense level of 26?
His base offense level was 20 because he was a felon.
And then he got an enhancement.
Right, he got the two enhancements.
Right, to 126. And the sentencing range there is 120 to 150 months.
Correct.
So there couldn't be any problem unless the judge went over the 150.
If the problem is that the offense level is higher, therefore allowing the district court judge to go higher when he's imposing consecutive sentences.
What are the consecutive sentences?
120 months for the felon in possession, which is the statutory maximum, and 30 months for the obliterated serial number. If the two levels had not been added, he would have been at a lower level, which is 100 to 125.
But you said 100 to 125 was the punishment for a felon in possession who hasn't sold an obliterated gun. That's what you told me when I asked you.
It would be... if it was just a felon in possession who has not sold an obliterated...
Yeah, no obliteration.
Right.
You said the range was 100 to 125.
Correct, without the enhancement.
But well, it seems very odd that if, in addition to being a felon in possession, he does have an obliteration, it doesn't lead to a higher sentence.
Well, if he was,
which is your view.
If he was just convicted of being a felon in possession, his guideline could not have been over 120 months, because that's the statutory maximum.
I know that, but he's a worse person than a mere felon in possession, and yet your argument is that he doesn't get any heavier sentence as a result of the obliteration.
He would still get a heavier sentence. He would still get the
consecutive
sentence.
Well, what would it be?
It would be, if the district court chose to use the statutory maximum, it would be 5 months. Your Honor.
So are you saying that, so what you're arguing for is a maximum of 130 months instead of 150 months? Is that what you're?
125.
How could it be 125? You said 125 was the top of the range for just felon in possession.
Top of the guideline range. 120 is the statutory maximum.
120?
Yes. 10 years. So the 5 months is what the difference is between the 10 years and the 120.
And 5 months is the only punishment for, the only extra punishment for obliteration, even though if you discharge obliteration, it could be 125 months. I don't get that.
Well, I the calculations work out that way. I think that happens.
What sense does it make? That if he's committed these two separate crimes, each punishable by up to 125 months. But on your view, the maximum that can be imposed is 130 months.
Correct.
Well, what sense does that make?
Well, it's the same. The guidelines have a calculation that arrives at a certain guideline range. Someone who had a lower criminal history.
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes sense if it holds him accountable for both.
No, it doesn't make any sense because here's a crime, the obliteration, which if charged separately is worth up to 125 months. And you say that because he committed another crime with it, he gets only 5 months of punishment.
According to the guideline range.
What sense does that make?
It makes sense with the calculations for the guideline range.
No, what is sense for the way a layperson might understand sense?
Well, I suppose that a layperson would think that that was not an adequate punishment. However, that may be true under many sentences under the sentencing guidelines.
Well, it does sound like nonsense, actually. It doesn't make any sense. You're not defending the sense of it. This is just some weird glitch in the way the guidelines have been drafted.
I would agree with that, and it's to Mr. Hernandez's.
So if we can find any way to erase this glitch, you wouldn't say an injustice had been done.
Correct, Your Honor, and I think that reason is under the 924C framework. It's the same analysis counts.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Mr. Elke?
Good morning. My name is Stephen Elke, and I represent the United States in this case. I was also trial counsel below in the district court.
Mr. Elke, rather than discussing this guidelines conundrum, I would appreciate it if you could explain to me better than you did in your brief why the admission of the evidence with respect to the pawn shop and the evidence with respect to the willingness to commit a different crime properly entered this case, because it seemed to me to be far from intricately related, utterly beside the point.
I don't have another reason, actually, Your Honor, other than what
you
is...
You just sort of say these things in the brief, but you don't explain why it has to do with his felony record or why it has to do with his knowledge of how Mr. Villanova got the gun, or why it has to do with anything, and why it has to do with the fact that this particular gun has an obliterated serial number. Seems to me the fact that other people sell guns with obliterated serial numbers might suggest that you don't know how to get them. It just seems to me so remote and quite prejudicial. District judge sort of brushed it off and said, oh well, it doesn't make any difference anyway.
As I said in the brief, Your Honor, I believe that it is circumstantial evidence. And
of what? Explain to me.
Of somebody who is willing to or is attempting to assure the delivery of the weapon.
What,
and
so I'll go use the weapon in a different place? What? Why does that tell me
anything?
Well,
he's expressing confidence, if you will, or he's saying to Detective Wall, the undercover agent, that I'm somebody who knows how to get these guns. I'm experienced in this area, if you will, and I'm willing to help you to do that. It's circumstantial.
Get the gun versus go use the gun in a different place. Maybe he's saying I already have a gun that I'll use for you, or I just
to the extent that Your Honor has an issue with the admission of that evidence, as pointed out in the brief, I would urge the court to find that that was harmless error in the context of this case and all of the other evidence that was admitted in this case. And it certainly wasn't, as in some cases where gory photographs or other types of inflammatory evidence are put before a jury, it certainly wasn't that type of evidence.
I don't know why you should retreat so quickly. I thought your position was that, well, this person, if he's actually willing to go and use a gun, threaten someone or what have you, this is the kind of person who is probably, when he's talking about his ability to procure a throwaway, he probably knows what he's talking about.
Well, that is true, Judge Posner.
Doesn't that make it propensity evidence?
No, I think it's more like the Lightfoot case that was decided by the circuit, and I don't mean to retreat from that, Judge Posner. I was simply addressing Judge Wood's, what I perceive to be her concerns, and that if she were to find that there was some problem, that it would be harmless in this case. But
the facts in Lightfoot are considerably more egregious than this. In Lightfoot, there's a debate about who's really in charge here, the woman who's being severely abused by the defendant or the defendant. And the evidence of abuse tended to show who was in the driver's seat.
That may be arguably that evidence.
Like that here.
Arguably that evidence is also more highly prejudicial, and so the balance would
tip. But it is pertinent to an issue about who's controlling whom. That was an issue in the case. Whereas how many ways these guns are going to be used in the future is not an issue in this case, according to the theories the government was using to prosecute.
Well, I would respectfully disagree, Judge Wood, with that, and I do believe that it is circumstantial evidence of someone who does know what they're doing and is willing to go to lengths to help this person obtain a gun in circumstances where this gun might be used, or is the person is told they're going to use the gun to, if not harm somebody, at least threaten to harm them.
Why is that an element? Which offense that you charged is that an element of? Felon in possession?
I believe it goes to the question of...
Felons in possession violate the law by having a gun.
Well, I think it goes, Your Honor, to the question, since it's undisputed that Mr. Hernandez never actually held the gun in his hand, it goes to the question of his constructive possession or control of the weapon. And it is, I would submit circumstantial evidence of that point as to somebody who can. And the Mazzella case, I believe it's cited in the briefs, the court talks about constructive possession can apply when there is an ability to assure the delivery of the goods so that you're constructively in possession even if you never hold them. And I think that all of that...
So the fact that there's a pawn shop somewhere in town tells us something about Mr. Hernandez's ability to deliver the gun? Or the fact that maybe he'll take something and go collect a debt?
It shows he's interested in guns. I suppose if he had said to Detective Wall, gee, I find guns terrifying objects, that he would certainly want to put that into evidence, wouldn't he?
Probably so.
So the unlikelihood that he would be a possessor or a seller of guns?
I would think so, Your Honor, and I think that it shows. At trial, the defendant's argument was, I'm just a mere broker, and somebody comes to me and says, I would like a gun.
So we could introduce evidence that someone was an NRA member, and they're more likely to be convicted of being a gun possessor. NRA love that.
It might go to the weight, Your Honor. I hadn't thought of the question before, but at some point I think that you're right. The trial court would have to step in at some point and say that it's too remote, but I don't think that that line certainly was crossed in this case with respect to the admission of that evidence. Just briefly, I don't know if you're through with that topic, but on the sentencing issue, it is a straight-ahead sentencing calculation, and I think that the appellant is trying to confuse the consecutive nature, which was used to come within the guideline range, with the calculation of the guideline range in the first instance. In this case, the felon in possession came to a level 20 under the grouping rules. It was, again, a 20. 4 points were added because he suspected, or Mr. Hernandez suspected or knew, that the gun was going to be used in the commission of a felony, and then you get the 2 points for the obliterated gun. At level 26, you have the guideline range going up to 150, and the district court imposed consecutive sentences simply to come within that guideline range. I think the court, if I'm inferring where the court was thinking on their line of questioning, is absolutely correct that if that's not done, then there is no penalty whatsoever for the obliteration.
Well, 5 months, I thought, was what her calculation. Christensen's calculation was an extra 5 months.
I guess that's
the
right.
Statutory but maximum on the felon in possession.
True, but there is no glitch in the sentencing guidelines, Your Honor. It was calculated exactly the way it should have been in this case.
Mm-hmm.
If the panel has any questions on the theory of the defense, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I don't have anything further to add.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Christian, thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of the court. Okay, court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.